There can be coarse language and adult concepts in our program, so please watch out for little ears that might be running around if you've got your podcast playing, or pop on some headphones, and that way no one can get offended but you.
To take on independent publishing, you do need to be a control freak because you need to be highly organised, you need to be self-motivated, you need to be able to set your own deadlines and actually stick to them. You need to be able to manage all aspects of the publishing because you are the publisher.
You're listening to the Rights for Women podcast, where we talk everything women and writing. I'm Kel Butler, podcaster and wannabe author.
And I'm Pamela Cook, author of 4 published books and a professional writing teacher. Together, we created the Rights for Women podcast to celebrate women writers and support women's rights.
Every Friday fortnight, you can look forward to an hour of Rights for Women dropping in your feed. We'll start with half an hour of chat with some brilliant female, trans or non-binary author. And whether you're a reader or a writer, you're going to love our chats on the Convo Couch this year.
In the second half hour, Kel and I will be chatting about the writing themes and challenges that resonated with us most out of the interview, both as women and as writers. So, if you are a woman writing,
or if you like women in writing,
if you like women who write,
or writing by women,
then the Rights for Women podcast is for you.
Listen to all of our episodes at www.rightsforwomen.com or subscribe in Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, or wherever you get your pods.
Welcome to Rights for Women. And today on Rights for Women, we're chatting to Jodie Gibson. Jodie is an author of women's fiction and writes in 2 genres, contemporary drama, and lighthearted rom-coms. Jodie's debut contemporary drama novel, The Memories We Hide, will be published later this year. And I first came across Jodie a few years ago now, I think on Facebook, and we were just sort of chatting. And Jodie has a great blog where she sort of writes a lot of really interesting stuff about her own writing journey. She chats to other authors, and she's been on quite a few author blogs that I've read too and has some great stuff to say. So welcome to Rights for Women, Jodie.
Thanks for having me, Pam.
Great to chat to you. So I didn't want to sort of fill listeners in too much on your writing journey because I'd really like you to do that. So I thought we'd start really at the beginning. If you can just tell us sort of how you first got into writing and, you know, where your writing journey's taken you up until this point.
Yeah, sure. Okay. Look, I guess like many writers, I've been writing ever since I learned to write and read. I was always writing stories as a kid. I kept a journal during my teenage years, which will never see the light of day. And I guess then life takes over, so writing took a back seat. You know, you move into jobs and careers and marriage and kids. So it was only probably maybe, I wish I'd written it down, I can't remember when, but it was about 10 years ago that the creative bug started to bite again. And I started playing around with a few creative stories. And at that stage, I was also writing as a job. I was freelance writing and doing articles and blogs for websites and a little bit of copywriting and some social media writing as well. So I think starting to do that sort of got my interest back into writing, and I started writing a few things, and I realized how much I enjoyed it, and sort of I just went from there. And it was probably about 5 or 6 years ago that I wrote my first full manuscript, and it was just a first draft, and it was probably the worst thing I've ever written.
Oh, we've all got those.
Oh, yes. And I think that at that point in time, I thought that I could really do this. I could do this as not necessarily to make a living out of it, because there's not a lot of money in writing, as we all know, mm-hmm. but as a career path, something to focus on and hone my skills in. I enjoyed doing it. I found that I was my best self when I was writing, and when I wasn't writing, I just wanted to be writing. So. Mm. So from there, I just sort of made the decision, okay, let's get serious about this. And I took a few courses with the Australian Writers' Centre. And then a couple of years ago, I did Fiona McIntosh's masterclass, which was amazing. And I think that was the point where I thought, yep, okay, I can do this. And so I decided to pursue it seriously.
Great. So tell me a little bit about Fiona McIntosh's masterclass, because I've heard a few people have, you know, that I know have done that. And it sounds like it's just a real turning point in some ways.
Oh, it was absolutely a turning point for me. Fiona has such a warm personality, and she's so passionate about writing and passionate about stories, and it's infectious. So when you go along, it's a week-long thing. You meet other writers who are in the same boat as you are. And Fiona just, I don't know what she does, but whatever it is she does, she just makes it make sense. And she makes story make sense to you, character arcs, what you're writing. She's so focused. And I walked away from that class, and I'd learnt probably more in that week than I'd learnt probably in the past 5 or 6 years.
Wow.
Yeah, so it really kickstarted me into knowing what was wrong with my writing, what was good about my writing, and knowing what path I wanted to follow from there on.
What were some of the challenges in those earlier years of writing, do you think, when you were writing that sort of first and second manuscript and getting your head around the process?
The challenges, I guess, with any working mother is parenting, finding the time to fit it in. But for the actual technical challenges of writing was I was very much a panster in the early days, but I found that when you did that, the structure was really not there. So the first draft was really draft zero. It was a real skeleton draft. So it took a lot of pulling in together. So I guess knowing how to pull a story together after it's sort of splurted out of you, that was a big challenge for me. And in subsequent drafts and manuscripts, since I've gained the knowledge and insight into how to craft a story, I've become more of a plotter. I wouldn't say I am an absolute plotter. Excuse me. I'm somewhere in between. I like to jot down what I think is going to happen in the story and then tackle the first draft. And at least if I know where it's going, it gives me some more structure to work with, and I still let the characters take me where they want to go with the story, but I find after that the second draft isn't as hard to draw in.
And are you someone that churns a first draft out pretty quickly once you've done that sort of initial plotting, you know?
Yeah, look, I would say it's not super quick. I wouldn't say 3 months or anything like that.
Yeah.
But probably about 8 or 9 months I'll have a first draft out. The editing and rewriting process is always a lot longer for me than the initial first draft.
You talked about, you know, being a working parent and trying to fit writing in. So how did you actually overcome that side of the problem or the challenge of writing?
You just learn to balance it a bit better, I think, don't you?
Yeah.
I don't think anyone's got the magical answer to that question.
But were there things that you sort of found that really helped with you being able to sit down and do some writing?
Definitely. Look, when both the kids were at school, that definitely helped. It gave me that chunk of time in the middle of the day. And I'd love to say that writing is the first thing I do at the start of the day, but we run our own business, so there's always business things to do. So, and that's what pays the bills. So I have to get that out of the way first, and then whatever time is left, I schedule in for writing. But I make sure that I have at least 2 or 3 hours out of the day now set aside for writing or writing-related things. If I don't get that done during the day, I will do that at the end of the day. I guess you've got to make it a priority.
You've got to schedule it in, haven't you?
You do. And I think that's how I don't do it as such now, but I used to have a schedule where I'd say, okay, for the first hour of the day, I'm going to do this. The second hour, I'll do that. And the third hour, I'll do this. And I think that really got me into a routine. And it is a routine. And routine works really well for me. I'm that type of personality where I work well with structure.
Yeah.
So for me, actually scheduling it in was probably the best thing I ever did.
Yeah. And since you sort of first started writing, you know, like you mentioned, you did a few courses and you've dabbled around and things. Have you stuck sort of with the same genre since the beginning, or have you played around with genre as well?
I have played around with genre, and I think that comes with finding your own voice. When I first started out, I didn't really – like I did a lot of reading, but genre to me was, you know, mystery and general fiction, you know, sci-fi. It was those real broad genres, whereas now I understand that there's a lot of sub-genres out there. So as I was writing, I was always going to write some type of women's fiction. It was always going to be contemporary. And then I found that I really – in my initial manuscripts, they were quite dark and quite heavy. And over the last few years, I still write that sort of thing, but I've found that I also enjoy writing a lighter style. So the rom-coms and the chick lit, as people don't like to call it these days. And I think I need that balance in my writing too, because a lot of the stuff I write is quite heavy.
So it can get a bit dark and depressing if you're just doing that all the time. Yeah.
It can. So I've really enjoyed stepping out of that and into something that's a little bit more fun, because I know myself with reading, you know, I don't stick to the one genre. I love my women's fiction. I love mysteries and dramas, but I also love that really light fiction too. And depending on your mood, you know, you pick up a book and feel and say, what do I feel like reading today? And that's how I am with my writing too. So I am lucky that I can do both and I get a lot out of it.
Yeah, that's great. So what have been some of the, like over that time period, you said about 10 years since you've been writing, what have sort of been some of the successes or the highs of that writing period for you?
There's been lots of highs and lows. I think the biggest high for me has been just, you know, I haven't had anything sort of published or anything yet, and I'm moving down the self-publishing route at the moment. But I have had a great feedback from editors and writer friends who have read things that I've done, and that sort of feedback keeps you going as to, you know, it sort of says, you know, you can do this. I was shortlisted in a competition, Birdcatcher Books, for one of my short stories, and that was another thing that sort of spurs you along. And also in the Queensland Writers Centre 8-word story competition, I had a couple of those up on the billboards as well. So
wow.
And it's just those little things along the way I think you have to take as wins, even though they might be scoring a publishing deal or winning a competition. But I think as an aspiring author, you have to take everything and you know, enjoy those little wins along the way, because there's a lot more challenges and disappointments.
So what have been when you've sort of got to the point where you've finished a manuscript and you're really happy with it, you've done your editing, you've done your revision, what have been the steps you've taken with your manuscript since then?
Okay, the number one step that I've taken is to engage a freelance editor. I know I like to do the first draft and I like to rewrite and edit until I feel I've done everything I can. And I never wanted to put anything out there, whether it be publishing it or sending it off to agents or publishers. I never wanted to put anything out there that wasn't ready. And I knew that the only way that I can make sure of that is to engage a freelance editor. And that's been the number one best thing I've ever done for my writing, is have an editor, a structural editor, to go through, do the structural edit, work with me and tell me what needs work, what's good, how we can make it better, giving me ideas on how to make the manuscript the best it can be.
So you'd recommend that for people that are out there maybe with a manuscript and thinking, I've finished it, now what do I do with it?
Absolutely, because at the point where I've been with my manuscripts and I've said, okay, I'm finished, that's the best I can do, the next draft has always like been so totally different that I look back and say, wow, that was not ready at all. So I think if you are serious about writing, you do need to take that extra step just to make it the best it can be.
And was having a book published something that you wanted to do from the beginning, or was that something that just sort of over the years as you continued to write and got more and more enjoyment from it, something that came to you as a, I think I want to try and get something published?
Yeah, it definitely wasn't there at first. I came back to creative writing just, I had a few ideas and I just started writing. There was never any assumption that I was going to get published or wanting to have anybody else read my work. And then it was just that I enjoyed it so much, and I feel like I'm a good writer and I have stories to tell. And I think at that point I thought, okay, well, maybe I can and look and see if anyone thinks that I can write, if they enjoy my stories as well, and put them out there. So that's when publishing sort of became the next step, I guess.
Yeah, yeah. And do you have beta readers? Do you get people to read for you before you send it to, or after you send it to an editor?
I usually have I have a small group of readers who are my newsletter subscribers. There's a handful, there's maybe 10 or 12 who have expressed interest in being a beta reader for me. And I sometimes send the full manuscript out, but I also send little tidbits out, particularly first chapters. I find that sending a first chapter out to a beta reader is a great way to know if you're capturing that interest and sparking the intrigue, because we all know when we start a book, if we're not enjoying the first few pages or the first chapter, we're not going to read on. So that was really important to me. So yes, and I will, as I progress along, I will use my beta readers more.
Yeah, yeah. So what were some of the, we talked about some of the successes and the great things about the writing process for you. Mm-hmm. What have been some of the lower points for you?
Gee, there's so many. Where do I start?
And not only what have they been, but how have you sort of overcome them as well? I know that that's also a constant thing that we struggle with, but it'd just be interesting to hear your perspective on that.
Yeah. Look, I think the lowest points have been points where I've got to in a story and I've just hit a brick wall. You can call it writer's block, you can call it whatever you want to call it, but you're at a point, whether it's not usually first draft, but usually during the editing process. I used to hate the editing process because it was just so hard. Mm. And I thought writing wasn't meant to be this hard. And I think you come up against that and you think, is it worth it? You know, why am I doing this? So you really just have to push through. And I don't know. I remember sitting at the computer probably a couple of years ago, staring at this manuscript thinking, it's just going nowhere. I don't know what to do with it. I don't know what's wrong with it. I know there's something wrong with it, but I just don't know what it is. And I think the best thing I did at that point was I put it away probably for 2 or 3 months. And I started working on something else and doing whatever. And then when I came back to it and read through it, it was, you know, like cleaning your glasses. I could just see what was wrong with it. So I think hitting those brick walls and hitting those stumbling points where you just think there's nothing you can do, you don't know what the problem is, either getting someone else to read it can help, but I think for me, putting it away and just coming back to it and clearing my head is probably the best thing that I did to work through those issues. And self-doubt is always a huge issue, particularly when you haven't got an agent or you haven't got a publisher. There's no validation, I guess, that you can write, so you start to doubt every sentence you put on the page and you read back and then you go and read a book that is published and you think, oh, I'll never be able to write like that.
Yes.
So, and I think how I get through that is just by reading other things, perhaps not what I'm working on at that point in time, but other things I've written in the past, even old blog posts where I'll read them and go, some of that's really cringeworthy, but there might be a 2 or 3 sentences or a paragraph that I go, that's really good.
Mm.
I don't know where that came from, but at the time that must have been really good. And just to get my confidence back that way, because self-doubt can be the killer for so many, right?
Oh yeah, I think it's the big crippler, isn't it? Just and everybody suffers from it. I think even people who have been writing for years and years and have had, you know, dozens of books published, I just from listening to a whole lot of people, I think there's always that self-doubt.
I think so.
Yeah.
And possibly more for a successfully published author, because they're up against, you know, the back catalogue that's sold really well and they're sitting down to write the next one, and I guess they're wondering, is it going to be as good? Is it going to sell as well?
Mm.
Like I can see that there's different challenges along the way when it comes to self-doubt.
Yeah. And that was interesting too, what you were just saying, those two things, is it going to be as good and is it going to sell well, which aren't necessarily the same thing, are they?
No, not at all. That is so true. I mean, how many books have you read, published authors that have, you know, had great reviews and you read it and go, I don't get it. That story's just not for me. And then you might read something else that you think is fantastic and it has the worst reviews.
Yeah.
And I think that's a thing as a writer, you need to remember that what you write is not going to be for everybody. And it's not even going to be for everybody in that genre that you write. But as long as you can reach out and connect with a few readers, I think you've got to take that as a win.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, for sure. Yeah. So you have made the decision to become an indie author. Can you tell us a little bit about sort of how you came to that decision?
Yeah, sure. Look, it certainly wasn't a conscious decision at first when I first, you know, thought about maybe I could be a published author one day. I did go down the route of traditional publishing. I subbed out to a few agents and publishers, and I heard a lot of nothing for a while.
Yeah. As you do.
As you do, which you just have to let it go. But I also had some good feedback as well. No offers, but I had a few agents and editors come back, come back and say, look, what you've sent us is good. I've had a few requests for the full manuscript, which is always nice.
Great.
And a couple that have come back and said, look, yeah, we like it. We can see potential in it, but it's just not for us at the moment. And so it wasn't necessarily a second choice. As I was sending these out and getting some responses back, I was also listening to a few podcasts regarding self-publishing. Joanna Penn's The Creative Pen and the self-publishing podcast is Mark Dawson's.
Yeah.
And I just found them really interesting. They just showed the other side of I guess what is the stigma around self-publishing, and they show the positive side of it. And I was really intrigued by it. And I'm also an impatient person. I think it was more to the fact that thinking I could be here in 5 years still trying to get an agent, still trying to get a publisher, and it's not the fact that maybe my writing's not good enough. It's just, you know, it's the luck of the draw in a lot of times.
And also the fact that they often have particular things they're looking for. You know, they might have an idea in mind, and if it doesn't exactly fit that box, you know, also that whole traditional publishing thing where, you know, they do market to particular genres and those boxes are very tight, whether it's crime or, you know, sci-fi or women's fiction or romance. They're not very tolerant of any blurring of those sort of lines, are they?
No, not at all. And I did find that with my manuscript that I did send out a few times. I was sort of confused as to what genre to put it in, which I think automatically puts you in the too hard basket.
Mm.
Whereas with indie publishing, you can blur those lines a little bit more. So that was also quite a plus on that side for me.
And
also the fact that I could be in control. I am a bit of a control freak.
It's funny how many independent publishers say that.
I think you have to be. If you are going to take on independent publishing, you do need to be a control freak, because you need to be highly organised. You need to be self-motivated. You need to be able to set your own deadlines and actually stick to them. You need to be able to manage all aspects of the publishing, because you are the publisher. You're the writer and the publisher. So I think to go down that route, you need to have some sort of control freak about you. So it like I said, not a conscious decision to do it. It just sort of felt right. And I also wanted to make the point today as well that indie publishing doesn't need to only be your second option. It can be, and it is a lot of people's first option these days. I guess the thing for me that I held on to the most about, you know, wanting a traditional deal is the validation.
That
someone says my book's good enough to publish. So if you can let go of that and you want your books out there, which is the main reason I want a traditional indie publish, is because I want to put my books out there. I want to keep writing. I don't want to be stuck on a few manuscripts trying to get them out there, and I just want to get them out there and keep writing, because I know when I keep writing, my books will get better. To have them out there is just the goal, I guess.
Yeah. So, yeah, just to pick up on a couple of things you said there, you know, I think with traditional publishing, there is that very long lead-in time. It takes quite a while to just even get your manuscript in front of a publisher. And then if they do accept it, you know, there's obviously going to be, you know, probably another year or so down the track before it appears.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it is a very long process, whereas the whole indie thing can be sped up. Obviously, once you know what you're doing, how have you found that whole learning curve around, you know, learning what you have to do in order to sort of put a book out there yourself?
Wow, it's huge. I'm still learning. I think I will be learning for the next 10 years.
Yeah.
I guess the space is always changing too, so you're always learning. I did undertake Mark Dawson's self-publishing 101 course.
Oh, yeah.
And that was fantastic because that told me everything I didn't know and a lot more. And it gave me the basics too, to know a process on how to do things, where to do them, what resources are out there for you to use, and how you actually go about getting a book up on somewhere like Amazon. So that was probably instrumental in my learning. But as I said, I think the actual process of doing it will be a learning curve in itself, rather than you can't just learn it and go and do it. I think the actual process of doing it will teach me a lot of things. I know I'm going to make mistakes, but as long as I learn from them for the next round, that's what I need to keep.
Yeah. And I think the good thing about the whole thing too is with, you know, when you do upload to Amazon or whatever your online platforms are, from what I'm understanding, because I'm taking the same journey as you, is, you know, that you can change things once they're up there too, you know, in terms of what you upload, not necessarily the book, although that's probably a lot easier to change as well when it's an ebook. But, you know, like your categories and all that sort of thing that you put on Amazon, all those things can change. So
that's right. And I think that's important too, because particularly if you are writing in a genre that perhaps is, you know, straddling a couple of genres, you need to work out what your keywords are going to be so that when people are searching on Amazon, your book comes up.
Mm.
So if you're finding that whatever you've got in there isn't really working, you can change that and you can play around with things and you can, you know, it's bit of trial and error as well.
Yeah. And you don't have, you know, if you have a traditional publisher who has uploaded your ebooks, you don't have that same option to go in and change things too. So there is that whole thing of control. How about choosing your cover? How did you go with that?
Okay, so the cover was probably the most surprising thing to me. I knew I was never going to do my own cover. It's not in my skill set. And I think going into indie publishing, I wanted to put a book out there that is indistinguishable from a traditional published book, so that when people are browsing on Amazon or wherever, they, you know, bring up two or three books and they won't be able to tell which is an indie book and which is a trad book. So it was really important to me to get my cover professionally designed. But the thing I didn't realise is that good cover designers are very hard to find and they are very busy. So while I thought, you know, I had a couple of months and I'll book in someone in the next couple of months and they'll have it back to me within a month or so, that was very wrong.
<Uh-oh>.
That sort of put me back about 3 or 4 months.
Right.
Because I did want a particular designer because I knew their work and loved their work and they worked in the genres that I was in. So I was prepared to wait rather than just throw my hat in the ring in places like Fiverr and you don't know what you're going to get.
Yeah.
So I can understand now why traditional publishing is such a long process because it does take time.
Mm.
It does. You've got to, and you're coordinating all this yourself as an indie publisher. So I think that timeline is probably the biggest thing I'll learn from this first book that I release. On, you know, you've got to know your blurb, you've got to know your synopsis, you've got to have your cover ready to go, you've got to know all of those things well in advance so that you can follow the timeline through to get it up when you want to have it published.
Yeah, there's a whole lot to organise, isn't there?
Absolutely.
and so you've now had your cover designed?
I have.
Actually
this morning woke up to my inbox with my first initial concepts.
Oh, fantastic.
Very exciting. I think I did squeal a little bit.
You're allowed to squeal. And was there anything that you sort of went, "Ooh, I love that"? You know, did you have that insta love thing with any of the concepts? Or?
Yeah, they sent through 4 concepts, and the first one I looked at was it. I said, "Yep, that's it. There's a couple of minor changes that I want, but it was exactly what I had in mind."
Oh, perfect!
It was fantastic. I was so thrilled.
Oh, that's exciting. So what's the timeline from here on for your book? Like, have you got a release date and everything organised? Or
I've got a vague release date of mid-year, sort of July, August, but I haven't locked in a date yet. I'm just going through the last rounds of copy editing at the moment, and then it's got to be proofread. Then the cover will be ready, and then I'll have all my files ready to go. So once I've got those files on my computer, that's when I'll set a date, because I don't want to have a date and then find that it's coming closer and I'm not quite ready.
To push it back.
I don't want to have to push it back. I want to be ready, and I don't want to stress myself out thinking, I've got less time than I thought I had. So once I've got those files, that's when I'll set a date. But I am hoping to be July, August. Which is exciting.
It is exciting. Congratulations. So tell us about the book. Tell us the title and as much as you'd like to tell us.
Okay. So it's called The Memories We Hide, and this one is a contemporary drama. It's a standalone novel, and it's a story of Laura Murphy. She's 27 years old and finds out her mum has late-stage cancer. So she heads back from the city where she's living at the moment to her small hometown where she grew up, to look after her mum in her final days. Now, Laura actually hasn't been home for about 10 years. She fled to the city after the tragic and unexpected death of her boyfriend, Ryan. It was just all too much for her to deal with. That was the end of the school year, and so she actually hasn't been home since then. So she's dealing with grieving for her mother and feeling the guilt of not being there for her mum, and also dealing with the memories of being back to the place where she really doesn't want to be. After her mum passes away, she finds a newspaper clipping that hints that there may have been more to Ryan's death than first thought. So knowing she's made a promise to her mum to finally confront her past, she reconnects with a childhood friend, Tom, to try and find closure. Tom's a good character because he's got his own problems as well, the threat of losing the family farm, but he's also hiding a secret about the night Ryan died, as well as his own feelings for Laura. So I guess together they navigate the relationship and secrets and betrayals, and they find out that memories can't always be trusted.
Wow, it sounds fascinating. And is that would you say that is a romance, Jodi, or not so much?
It has romance elements in it, but it's I wouldn't say it's a true romance. I would class it more as just contemporary women's fiction.
Women's fiction, yeah. Yes. How do you?
With the romantic elements.
How do you feel, just while we're on that, about the term women's fiction? Because it's actually one I don't mind myself, but I know it does come in for a lot of flack. What are your thoughts on that?
I'm probably much the same as you. I don't mind it. I don't find it, I guess, degrading, as in, you know, it's women's fiction, you don't have men's fiction. I understand that argument, and, you know, I absolutely wish there was a better term for it. But I think it does describe the genre well, because it's about women writers discussing women's issues and the problems that we face in normal everyday life, and that can be a whole range of things. So it's quite a broad genre, but I think it also has a good feel about it. And I think, it's a popular genre, so I don't mind the term. And
yeah.
I think it's a bit like the other genre I write in is, I guess, chick lit, which is a terrible description as well, but there's not much else that describes it, just a light-hearted, fun read.
Yeah, yeah. And like you say, they're terms that people know and immediately know the sort of book that fits into that category.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I think it's going to be a lot to try and change that.
I often
think that perhaps we could use the genres that are available in cinema or film, which is why I call mine drama, contemporary drama, rather than, you know, a women's contemporary fiction, because So this is more of a drama that you'd find, you know, on the drama section of Netflix, for example.
Yeah, yeah. And so where is it set, Jodie? It sounds Australian to me, but...
Yeah, it's set in Australia. It's set in a fictional town in regional Victoria. It's not a tiny community. It's more of, you know, sort of, you know, a small town feel, farming community. But it's, I wouldn't necessarily say it's rural either. It's just, I guess that's small town fiction.
Yeah.
I find that the dynamics of a small town very interesting to play with.
Yeah, you've sort of got those parameters there, haven't you, where people know everybody and so they know the good things, but there's also the idea that they know everybody's business and...
Yes.
Yeah.
And that's the other thing. They think they know everyone's business, but you really don't know what's going on behind closed doors. And I really find that premise intriguing.
Mm. Oh, sounds great. Can't wait to read it. And I love the title too. I love that. It sort of immediately, you know, tells us that there is something to hide. So
yes, yeah.
That's great. How are you handling all the sort of social media and marketing side of your, you know, publishing venture?
Yeah. Look, it's a hard thing to balance. I have done social media training. I was a social media consultant in the early days of social media, and so it's changed a lot since then. So I do have that basic knowledge, but again, you're learning along the way, and it's always changing. It's something that I enjoy. I enjoy connecting with readers and other writers online. I enjoy the fact that you can have a conversation with someone, whether it be on Facebook or even Instagram or Twitter, and you can actually make quite meaningful connections, which, you know, say 20 or 30 years ago, to have brought that concept out, people would have thought that's ridiculous. You can't have a meaningful connection with someone unless you've met them. And I really enjoy that part of the connection and connecting, I guess, with readers and talking about all things reading, writing, and just in general. And I think that's an important part of social media. It's not just about trying to hop on Facebook and sell your book. Mm. You want to make connections, and you want to make connections for more reasons than just trying to sell your book, because I think it's quite obvious when someone's just up there saying, buy my book, and yeah, it doesn't work.
No, it's very annoying, isn't it? And I think it turns people off.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But you definitely, and particularly as an indie publisher and even traditionally published authors, they need to have social media profiles these days as well, and they're usually the ones handling a lot of their social media. So it is something that authors and writers need to do. It's just a necessity these days. So I just feel if you've got to do it, you may as well enjoy doing it.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. And I agree, you make some great connections, you know, and that's how I met you, even though...
Exactly, look at us now.
That's right. So how have your family and friends sort of reacted to, well, I guess your writing in general, but then also your sort of decision to publish?
Yeah, look, I was writing in secret for a long time. initially, when I thought it was just a hobby, it was, you know, I don't need to tell anyone I'm writing a book. And because when you tell someone you're writing a book, you know, they automatically ask you 100 different questions. Yeah. So you're not really ready to answer.
Yeah. Like, when is it going to be published?
Exactly. My main question. So it was probably only a couple of years ago when I decided that, okay, I was going to work towards publication, that I started telling a few people and family members and friends, and then I told everyone on my blog and social media, so it was out there and I couldn't hide anymore.
Yeah.
But everyone's been really supportive. My family's been supportive, my kids particularly, they always keep asking, when's your book going to be out?
Yeah.
Like, soon. So I'll actually be able to tell them a date soon. So they're really excited about it. And everyone online and friends, I've had so much support, and it's been really great, because, you know, they're not necessarily there championing me every second of the day, but just to know that, you know, they're excited when I say, you know, I'm setting a date, or if I've got my cover back, and they're excited too. And so that's really good to have that support and just know that they're there and behind me.
Yeah. Has anyone in your family read your book yet, or read any of your books?
No, not yet. Not yet. So I've sort of kept that back. Not for reasons that I don't think they'll enjoy it, or it's more for reasons that, you know, I want them to be part of the excitement when it comes out. I think, you know,
yeah.
I want them to feel that excitement with me. Whereas if they've read it before, I feel that, you know, they'll know what it's about. They'll know it sort of dampens it. So I just want to hit them with it when it's released.
That's true. And have you sort of thought, you know, beyond release date for this book, have you sort of got a plan going forward of how you want to manage, you know, say your next book and your next, or are you just going to think about one at a time?
No, I've definitely got a plan. I've got a 3-book series for my rom-com that I'm working on at the moment. I've got the first book that's just going through final edits, and I'm beginning the second book. I was planning on releasing that later in the year, but I think I'm going to hold off until I've got the second book ready so I can release 1 and 2 quite quickly.
Mm-hmm.
And then work on the third. And I've got another couple of manuscripts in the contemporary drama genre that are works in process, and one that's going towards final draft stage. So I think you do need to have a plan.
Yeah.
And, you know, it may not be set in stone, but, you know, that's the control thing. I can control things. Yeah, so
exactly.
I could pull back on the rom-com release knowing that I wasn't ready to do that yet, and it would be a better idea to release them as 1 and 2 quite quickly. So I'm in control of that. I guess a rough plan by the end of 2020, I'd like to have those 2 books out and probably another of my contemporary drama books. And I got lots of ideas that I want to get stuck into.
That's great. It sounds like you're well on the way. So just to finish up, first of all, before I ask you my last question, is there anything that you wanted to share with listeners that we haven't sort of covered yet?
I don't think so. Just that, particularly on the indie publishing, I did want to – there's so much stigma about it, and it is changing, but gradually. And I think if you do choose to go down that route, know that it doesn't need to be – a second option, and that a lot of indie authors who do choose to self-publish aren't doing it because they weren't good enough to be traditionally published. They're doing it as a choice, a lifestyle choice, a career choice. But if you are going to do it properly.
Mm-hmm.
So you need to get it professionally edited. You need to get it proofread. You need to get it formatted properly. You need to get your cover design done properly so that that book is – so the reader on the other end of the line can't tell the difference between a traditionally published book and an indie published book, because at the end of the day, the reader doesn't really care who published it. They just want a good story, and they want to know that it looks good and it sounds good, and what's between the pages is good. So,
yeah, I think that covers the question I was going to ask, actually. Oh, well done.
I've dropped ahead for you.
That's fine. But just lastly, if you could think back, you know, to when you first sort of started writing or had that urge and passion to write, what would you sort of say to that self now? Knowing what you know now, what would you say to yourself at that stage?
At that stage, I'd say keep going, because it's worth it. It's just because, like I said before, there were times when I was ready to give up, where I was thinking, why am I doing this? Because it's hard. And it is hard, but it's absolutely rewarding. That feeling when you finish a first draft is amazing, and the feeling when you actually finish a manuscript that's at a publishable state is even better than that. And it just makes all of those long nights, long days, those frustrations and pulling your hair out and slamming your head against the keyboard, it makes it all worth it. And don't let anyone put you down. Don't let anyone dull your sparkle, because if you want to do it, just keep at it. Just keep doing, keep learning, and just do it.
Great advice. Just do it. It's a good one, though.
Yeah, it works.
So, Jodie, can you tell us where we can find you online?
Sure. I'm on Facebook and Instagram at JF Gibson Writer, and my website is jfgibson.com.au. Put me on the spot there.
Yeah.
For where I can find myself. Jodie Gibson Writer, I think I come up, so there you go.
Yeah. Okay, well, thank you so much for talking to us. It's been really interesting sort of seeing, you know, how your journey is progressing, and I'm really excited for you, and I can't wait to sort of share hopefully some of that joy when your release comes out, and be watching with bated breath to see how it all goes.
Yes, thank you. Thank you so much for having me, Pam, and I can't wait that we're going to be experiencing this self-publishing journey together. So it's really exciting.
Yeah, I'm sure we'll have a few tips to share with each other. Thanks so much, Jodie.
Thanks, Pam.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye.
Pam, Jodie is somebody actually that I've been following since I first decided to start writing. She was a woman who came up when I was doing searches about people who had websites and blogs about how to write. And I've actually been following her for years, and it's so nice to hear her talk about moving into actually publishing her books, because I know that she's been on this journey for a really long time. And all of her advice has always been helpful and motivational and relatable. But I think this episode, really, I'd love to turn this section today around a bit and talk to you about your self-publishing journey, because I think it's a natural segue, because you're on this journey too now, doing a similar thing. And Jodie talks in the episode about making that decision to go, nah, I'm not going to take the traditional route. I am going to go down the self-publishing route. She talks about that that wasn't an easy choice to make. There are a lot of factors involved. And it made me think, wow, what were you thinking in making this choice for yourself? Like, what did you have to consider before you jumped ship and said, yeah, I'm going to do this? And what sealed it for you?
Yeah. Oh, so much there, Kel. And I agree. Jodie is someone who's been amazing on social media for the last few years. You know, she's very, very professional about the way she goes about talking about writing, about learning about writing, really happy to share all the knowledge and information that she collects along the way. And, you know, she's someone that I really admire, and she's put in the hard yards in terms of, you know, she hasn't just scribbled off a book and gone, oh, I want to publish this, I'm going to put it up on Amazon. You know, she's done the courses, she's done the writing, she's this isn't her first book, you know, that she's putting out there. And I really admire that, because it takes a lot of self-restraint in some ways, because, you know, when you do write something and you know, I really admire, another thing I really admire about, you know, the conversation I had with Jodie, she said, I feel like I'm a good writer and I've got stories that people will want to hear. Like, fantastic, because it's really hard sometimes to say that about yourself. You know, I've had 4 published books and I still, you know, those words would still stick in my throat. So I really admire that, and I really admire the fact that she is out there sharing her journey so openly and really being willing to learn from other people, and but also to help other people along the way as she's traveling that path. So, but just to the second part of your question, Kel, about, you know, the decision to self-publish, I'm going to be 100% honest here. It's something I never ever thought I would do. I never thought I would be self-publishing a book. You know, if I guess for a lot of us, and not for everyone, but for a lot of us, traditional publishing is the holy grail. And, you know, I've been really, really lucky that I've had 4 books published by a traditional publisher in Australia. I've learnt a huge amount in that time, not just about my own writing, but about the whole publishing industry, the way it works, the changes that it's undergone. And I guess with my 5th book, which is the one that will be coming out later in the year, I sort of got to the point where I had, you know, it took me some time, but I had that story there ready, you know, and I submitted it to my publisher. I got a, yeah, no, probably not, maybe type thing. Made a few changes, sent it back. It was still a very lukewarm response. And again, I'm going to be 100% honest, that was based on the fact that my last book sales didn't meet the expectations that the publisher had thought, you know, had, I guess, hoped for. And that's a really bitter pill to swallow. And it's also very hard because all the books that were printed were sold. So it makes it very hard as an author to then go, well, you know, I thought I'd ticked all the boxes. For me, it was probably my best written book to that point. It had a more complicated structure. It had 3 points of view, you know, like, so in my scale of improvement, which is what I always try and do with a new book, I was improving my writing and my overall, you know, approach to the whole thing. And I did sell all the books that were printed. So, but then it's still not enough, you know. So I, you know, I did have a very down period where I thought, oh, well, maybe that's it. And, but this story just was there and I really loved the story. I loved the characters. And yes, I knew it needed more editing and it needed more improvement. So I sort of started to just really tiptoe around that idea of self-publishing, you know, and, or indie publishing as now the sort of more popular phrase or commonly accepted phrase. And when I was, you know, like Jody said, when I started to look into it, for quite a few people now, it's actually becoming a first choice. It's not necessarily, you know, and a plan B as it is, I'll be honest, for me. But the more I look into it with the way that the changes have happened in the publishing industry, you know, the reality is that there's only so many books a year a traditional publisher is going to publish. They're looking all the time for the big sellers because it is a business. And, you know, if you're, you know, if you're selling books and you're selling a decent amount but still not maybe after a number of years, still not maybe hitting the great big sales that they're after, you know, that's the position I guess that I found myself in. And so then you sort of come to that crossroads. Sorry, that was the name of my last book. I found myself at a crossroads. Anyway, I just started investigating it and I thought, look, why not give it a try? You know, I'm really glad in a way that I'm at this point in my career when I am doing it, because it is quite daunting. There's a lot to learn. You're not just the writer. You're the writer, the editor, the, you know, the publisher. You're the publisher of the book, basically. And whether, you know, how much of you do that yourself and how much you actually freelance out to people. So, you know, but I sort of made the decision, like Jody, that, you know, if you're going to do it, you do it properly. And I've hired a very professional cover designer, an editor, a proofreader. I'm working with a consultant who's very au fait with everything that goes on in the self-publishing world and helping me do all that. So yeah, it's, and look, really, the more and more I look into it, you know, the people that Jody mentioned, like Joanna Penn, Mark Dawson, who has the self-publishing podcast and has amazing courses that, you know, even traditionally published authors can learn a huge amount from. There's just so much knowledge out there. And I think it has, even though there has always, well, hasn't always, but there has been a bit of a stigma around self-publishing. It's like that, oh, well, can't make it in the real world, so you're self-publishing, you know. I don't think that's necessarily true anymore. I think, you know, I know quite a few really, really fantastic writers who are putting their books out there and are, who are opting to do this as a first choice because of that amazing word that Jody mentioned, control. You know.
Well, Kim Kelly's doing it. Pauline Nguyen did hers. She made a conscious choice to not go with a publisher because she wanted more control over it and how it was marketed and all of those things. And I think maybe what you said, you've hit on something there. Maybe it's not that it's, you know, oh, well, you can't succeed in publishing, so you go and self-publish. Maybe it's that traditional publishing has gotten too small for the amount of creation that's happening nowadays. And if they're only allowed to or able to publish within certain parameters a certain amount a year, then, yeah, I feel like our ability to create for ourselves has stratospherically outweighed our ability to put those creations into the world in traditional means. And so people are out there, just like with podcasting. Look at us, we're out there doing a podcast. We just did that on our own. We didn't have to go to a broadcaster. We just went, meh. We didn't claim to be the best podcast in the world, but or anything. We didn't know what we were doing at the beginning. But the same thing, we created our own space. And I think that's what this self-publishing has now become. It's the same thing. It's authors, creators, storytellers creating their own space, creating their own niche, and also refusing to be pigeonholed as well, which is part of the other thing that you found was happening with you. Isn't
yeah,
that?
That's right.
This was also a reaction.
Yeah,
that.
That's so true, Kel. So, you know, I think traditional publishers are very much the gatekeepers in some ways. They just, the nature of the business is that they need to have authors in particular genres marketed a particular way so that audiences know what they're getting. But once you're sort of in that, in the traditional industry, you tend to be shoved there and that's it. And if you sort of branch outside of that, it can be very hard. Look, some authors do it. I went to a great author talk last night, Kate Nunn, who's just got the Forgotten Letters of Esther Durant out, and she started off in contemporary fiction. She's now doing amazingly in historical fiction, same with Natasha Lester, who we've spoken to before. So it's not impossible to break out of a genre, but there's definitely more opportunity if you are an indie author, I guess, to write in different genres, as Jodie is doing. You know, she said she likes to mix it up. She does a bit of rom-com type stuff. She does some darker, you know, more serious type writing as well. And she still has control of that process and is able to choose how she markets it and who she markets it to.
It also enables readers to make their own choices as to what they want to read according to the content rather than according to some set categorized format that publishing sets out to make it easier for them to market their books and also gather data. A lot of this is about them gathering data nowadays. If they can't put it into a box, they don't know what to do with it. But the true part of storytelling is to create new boxes, break out. No artist wants to stay stuck in a box. There's no growth in that. And you can, you know, and that's even true of people who stay writing within a genre. You find that they stretch their writing in other ways within that genre. So I think we're also finding this as well in what we're sort of seeing in that commercial sort of women's fiction, how we've sort of been looking at diversity and sort of seeing that how it's actually informing the reader as well. So when you create these structures, when you create these parameters, I guess, through industry, you then set those parameters for readers. And I think that what we're really trying to do in this society now is to crush a lot of those parameters and flatten it all so we can all just be a melting pot of people and of stories. And I think indie publishing is a big part of that. Same way that film came out big with indie film, like in the 90s. Look at the indie thing. Yes. I mean,
and that's something I think that's a really good comparison with writing because, I mean, I know for years it's sort of been cool if you're in the indie music scene, you know, but if you were previously up until the last couple of years, if you're in the indie publishing scene, it wasn't seen as cool, you know, but I think they're very similar things. They're just people who have a story to tell. They've got something to create. They're finding it really hard for whatever reason, and there's so many reasons that it's hard to break into that traditional, you know, scene in both industries. You know, and I think also the growth of technology, you know, the fact that we can, you know, we're sitting here recording this over a computer and it's all being recorded and then you'll do your magic and blah, blah, blah. And, you know, that technology has allowed it the advent of ebooks, which was very scary for traditional publishers for a long time, I think. But that's all calmed down. And, you know, there's just so many options available to people now to be able to create and to be able to put their work out there and to find an audience. Because it's amazing when you start researching, you know, some of this self-publishing stuff and you look at, so you've got to learn all about your keywords and your categories and everything that, you know, where your books are put up on Amazon. And, you know, you look at some of the things that people type in to find a story, you know, the phrases and things like that. It's incredible. It's things you think, really? I never would have thought to type that in, you know, but there's stories out there for everybody. And I think while I'm very, you know, keen to have a really top quality product, like I want my book to look like every other book. I want it to read as well or better than other books that I've written and books that are coming out. I just think there is something for everyone and, you know, why not have that up there and have it as part of the mix and just see what happens?
Well, the other thing is you have an existing readership and nobody's asked them if they don't want to hear from you anymore. Nobody asked all those people who bought those thousands of books from you, and they were thousands of books, whether they want to not hear from you again. And that's essentially what happens when a publisher decides no more or you can't move from this box and if you want to, well, sorry, we're not interested. It's essentially them telling the readers, well, no, sorry, you can't read this person anymore. We don't think that they're good enough for you. And it's like, isn't that the reader's
choice?
That's
so true, Kel. Yeah, and I have to say that, you know, when I've had days where I've been a bit, what am I doing, you know, like It's amazing how this happens, but often it's just the day that I'll get a message from a reader or somebody will put on my Facebook page, when's your next book coming out, you know? And that that's something I would say to everybody listening. If you have an author or authors that you really love their stories, you really enjoy them, you know, please let them know. Either just send them a quick message or an email. You know, everybody's social media details are out there these days. Because even though you might look at them and think, oh, wow, they're such a successful author, or they're, you know, it doesn't matter how successful they are or who they are. All of them, believe me, are going to have days where they think, why am I doing this? Nobody's interested in reading what I'm writing. So, yeah, just send them a quick message and say, hey, love your book. When's your next book coming out? Or just something like that, because you would be amazed how motivating and just how much courage and sort of push that can give you as a writer.
Yeah, I'd never really thought of it from that perspective, that it's a really good motivational tool. It would be lovely. I could imagine any creator of anything, the idea of being validated by the people that you make it for.
Yeah, if it's just one person, you know, it makes a huge difference.
That's true. So get out there and thank you, writers, for writing all of that wonderful stuff right now. You make me all emotional, Pam. My God, now I'm bumping my microphone, doing all sorts of weird stuff.
But I think that's another thing, Kel, where social media has been a great advent for readers and for writers, is that we have that connection now. There's a much closer connection between the creator of the work and the people consuming it or enjoying it, you know, or not enjoying it maybe in some cases. And, you know, there is that ability, you know, while there's a negative side of that in that you can be contacted and you know, trolled or whatever, there's also that ability for readers to connect.
Well, especially if you know that they happen to be doing it themselves. If you know that that author that you love is publishing this themselves and marketing it themselves, then give them a boost and go out there and say, hey, I'll help you by giving it a word of mouth shout out on my social media or something like that and let others know about it. But I think that's something else that you bring to the table with self-publishing, is that you've done 4 books. You know the process that's involved in marketing a book and building your author platform. You've already built a readership, so you've got something to work from. What do you think about, like, it would be so much harder doing that ground up. You're starting from a really good position. Was that a big factor for you in making that choice, like the fact that you already had this experience and this readership?
Absolutely, yeah. And look, I've had friends do it from the very beginning, and it's like that's probably what scared me off more than anything, actually, has been seeing how much work it has been for them in terms of building their audience, building, you know, their platform and their marketing and all that sort of stuff. I mean, anyone that's got a background in marketing has an advantage, I think, because they already know, you know, a fair bit about getting the word out. But, yeah, you're right. I feel very fortunate that I have had, you know, I've built up a readership and I have got a lot of connections in the writing industry. I've got people, you know, I've had a couple of very well-known authors read my book for me and give me cover endorsements and give me great feedback on it. And which has been a fantastic, you know, boost for me as well. So I'm really lucky there. And you know, I don't want anybody to think, oh, I'm bagging out my publisher, you know, that, oh, they didn't sell enough books. I'm fully aware that this is just the way of the world and way things work. And, you know, I'm actually really grateful for the experience that I've had being a traditionally published author. And I'm not saying that I would never go back there. Although ask me in 6 or 12 months, you know, if this ends up being a really good experience and I'm enjoying it and I'm actually, you know, doing well with it, then I'll probably stick with it. You know, maybe I won't ever try and get another traditional publishing deal. But at the moment, I guess I'm what you call a hybrid author, that I'll have some traditionally published books and maybe some self-published. But
so I was actually thinking about what you were saying at the very beginning when you were talking about what led you to this decision and the whole process with your publisher and those conversations and sort of how hard they were. And I remember that time with you, and I couldn't imagine talking to you last year while you were going through all of this. At that time, I couldn't imagine you ever sitting here so openly and vulnerably and honestly talking about all of that. How is that for you now? Because I know that was a really hard time for you. Like that.
Yeah.
So for you to be here, you know, less than a year later, self-publishing, talking so openly about it, wow. Yeah. Like what happened?
Yeah, that's a really good question, actually. I think, you know, I had to do a lot of hard thinking about it, and I had to do a lot of hard thinking about how open I was going to be about the process. You know, I could put the book out and hopefully it will look like every other book and nobody will know, you know, that it's self-published. I spoke to some people and I spoke to some readers about, you know, did they care if a book was self-published? And look, but the bottom line is people don't care as long as the story's good and they're enjoying the book. And I guess it was just a little bit of time. And the other thing I thought was, you know, how authentic do I want to be about this process? If I make it a secret that I'm self-publishing a book, what message is that giving to other people and other writers? Because I truly believe that, you know, within the traditional publishing industry, there is a lot of stuff that maybe, how do I say this, that isn't the best quality. There's
a whole lot of crap out
and
there.
There's stuff in the self-publishing industry that's not great quality, but equally there's stuff in both industries that is extremely good quality. And, you know, just after doing the research and talking to people and finding out more, and again, it's and like we saw with Jodie, it's all about doing your research and doing your work and really thinking hard about where you're at and what's going to work for you. I thought, I want to be authentic about this. I don't want to be all cloaks and daggers and, oh, no, you know, this is published by a publishing house. Yeah, it's my publishing house. You know, it's an independent publishing house. So I guess I just wanted to.
I didn't know that, Pam. I did not know that you were thinking of releasing it sort of on the sly like that.
I wasn't actually, I hadn't made that decision, but this was one of the options, you know, I made the decision I am going to go down the indie path. How do I do that? How do I go about it? So, you know, do I do it so I'm sort of still looking like I'm traditionally published? And I do want the book to look like every other book on the shelf because I want a great quality product, you know, and that's the bottom line. Not because I want to hide it or be secretive about it anymore, but I guess it was just a matter of time and a matter of coming to grips with the idea that, okay, I was at a bit of a crossroads and, you know, if I'm going to independently publish a book, publish it myself, you know, that is a path I'm heading down. And, you know, it's a decision that is a huge decision but also gives you so much freedom. So, but it's also one that I think other people can learn from, and it's not, you know, it's not one that I want people to go, oh, well, you know, that's it. I'll just have to self-publish, you know, because I have had a few people say to me, gee, like you've been in the industry for a while and, you know, you can't get a book traditionally published. What hope have I ever got? You know, like I've had a couple of emerging authors say that to me or people in their early parts of their career.
Really?
Yeah. And I don't want people to think that. Yeah, and I think nothing much has changed in that it's always been hard to get a traditional publishing deal, always. That's not changed at all, you know, and I think a lot of it is it's not just talent, it's hard work, it's perseverance, it's being in the right place at the right time, it's a particular genre perhaps being popular at a particular time when that publisher is looking for it, it's making connections, it's meeting people, it's all of those things. But you know, equally, I think doing the whole indie publishing thing is, it's just another world to explore. And I just think it's, you know, now I have had time to become comfortable with it. I've, you know, the book has been through numerous revisions. It's had a couple of really professional edits. I'm really, really happy with, you know, where it's sitting at the moment. And it's just a story I want to get out there for readers. So we'll see.
So how have you found the process? We won't go into it all now because we're going to actually talk about that later in another episode. But just generally since making that choice and actually jumping ship? And so you just said you've gone through the editing process. You talked about the fact that you were getting a cover. You're going to have to actually get the book printed, marketed. Mm-hmm. How are you finding the process of doing all this? It's like setting up a whole business.
It is setting up a business, Kel.
It is.
Yep, it is. It's actually setting up your own business. That's what it is, you know, and that's something I think people need to get their heads around too. I think definitely take advantage of all the information that is around out there. Read Wiley, research, listen to the people out there who are have learnt, like Jodie, and who are still learning. And, you know, I guess I'm only partway through the process because we're not at print stage yet. So I've still, now I've got, I'm up to the proofreading point. So I've now got from that point to the point where it's going to be, you know, uploaded onto all the various platforms in ebook form and then going through, it'll be print on demand, which is a whole other story. And, you know, so then it'll be the whole sales and marketing path that, I'll have to, you know, navigate, I guess.
Maybe, I don't know if you've got time because I know that you're juggling a lot at the moment, but would it be possible for you to do sort of just a blog post of the most useful links and resources you've found?
It's a great idea. Yeah. Some podcasts and websites and things. Yeah, for sure. Articles.
Yeah, yep. Yeah. For them to go and investigate and get started. There was that guy that
Mark
you mentioned
Dawson.
Who's got those courses.
Mark Dawson, Self-Publishing 101. Stuff. Yeah, brilliant. Yeah. And he's doing a whole lot of new courses and they're updated all the time. And he's an English guy, really good to listen to and just seems really authentic and down to earth. And, yeah, obviously he's making money out of what he's doing, but it's all very useful stuff, you know. So, yeah, and look, there's whole podcast, just like there's podcasting conferences, there's whole self-publishing conferences happening now all around the world. There's sort of a couple of different models with self-publishing too. There's sort of this idea that you have to get the books out fast, you know, like and that whole idea that people have to churn out, you know, 6-8 books a year.
Oh, wow.
Particularly in some, yeah, well, particularly in some genres like romance, maybe some of the paranormal sci-fi type things.
That's a lot of books
in those areas. Yeah. Because those readers just devour them and they just want more, more, more. So if you put one book up and they haven't very quickly got, you know, the next book or the next in the series or whatever, if you're writing a series, then, yeah, they'll go and find someone else. But, you know, increasingly I'm finding a lot of authors who are just putting out the book a year, you know, really just doing as you would do in a traditional publishing contract or in a deal, you know, where you then market the book, you sell it. But then, as you said before, the backlist is important, or having the next book up probably within a year or 18 months is probably, you know, good just to keep yourself in the public space, you know, and give yourself something else to have up there for readers. But, it seems that whole really fast publishing, which has a lot of problems with it in that people then try and churn stuff out quickly. It's poorly edited. It's maybe not as well put together as it could be. It has encouraged things like, you know, some of those scams where people are actually plagiarizing because they don't have the time. Yeah. So they're plagiarizing from other works or other authors in order to get it up quickly. So it has created some problems in that way. But it is a model that a lot of authors, particularly in those certain genres, still do follow. And certainly some of them do it brilliantly and are producing amazing work. And it actually blows my mind when you know, read about some of these people or talk to some of them, how fast they can write and how well and quickly they can edit and how they can actually get up some really great quality stuff, you know, in a very short space of time.
Mm.
Mm. Well, you know, one thing, and you know, I've always said that the writing industry and amongst the writers that I know, everybody is so helpful. You know, I mean, you might get your odd one who is just very competitive and just out for themselves, but everybody's always been very helpful, happy to sort of, you know, help you promote your work or whatever. And in the indie industry, I think that's probably even more magnified, you know, that people have learnt, you know, they've been through the process that I'm going through too, for instance, and are more than happy to share that knowledge with you and that information and to help you along the way. So, and I think that is now starting to naturally form these sort of little, you know, I know of a few authors who are forming these sort of little publishing collectives where they're you know, helping each other promote their work and editing for each other.
I think that's what you do. You get together with some other authors. You promote each other's work. You get together and travel around and create. And it also, in terms of diversity and minority groups, this is a way of being able to push through when they're being told, sorry, your voice isn't welcome here. And in the bigger commercial markets, and being able to say, well, sorry, our voice is welcome anywhere. And we'll just put it out there anyway.
Yeah, I think that's what indie publishing is really great for, groups that, you know, so for instance, I know that there's a really big paranormal, for instance, readership. Now, that's not, most of that is not traditionally published, but it is absolutely huge. Like, there is such a big readership for that internationally, and the people that write in that genre just write book after book and get it out there and are doing really well in that space, you know. So like you say, in that world of, you know, diverse cultural backgrounds and things like that, or people with stories to tell that, you know, find it really difficult to get through the gatekeepers, if you like, you know, there's definitely the option to get out there and do, you know, like you're saying with Pauline, you know, and be able to tell your story in the way you want to tell it.
Yes, and control the narrative that goes around it as well, which is just as important, I think, especially if you're someone telling your own personal story. Yeah, I'm really excited by this conversation, Pam. I'm really excited as a wannabe writer still, looking towards the future and seeing a whole lot more space available, like more interesting places to go. And in 5 years' time, gosh, the landscape could be so different.
Yeah.
We should probably wrap it up there, I think. Yep.
Yep. Lovely chatting, as always.
And you want to give a little blurb about Storyfest? It's only a week away.
It's two weeks away. So Storyfest is happening on the South Coast in beautiful Milton, my favourite part of the world, on the 21st to the 23rd of June, 2 weeks' time, and there is an amazing lineup of authors, including, you know, Natasha Lester, who we've had on. We've had Lauren Chater. We have Meg Keneally will be there, Thomas Keneally's daughter, who has written an amazing, she's written books with Thomas. I think this is her first independent historical fiction novel, Fled, which she currently has out. We've got a great environmentalist, John Blay. Inga Simpson is doing some hosting there. Like, there's just Jane Caro. Like, who doesn't want to see Jane Caro talk? She's amazing live. And she's doing a great lunchtime talk about her latest release, Accidental Feminist. And there's just, look, check out the website. There's also an amazing podcasting workshop happening by Kel Butler from Listen Up Podcasting on Sunday, the 23rd of June. That's right, from the expert, from learn from the best.
Well, I'll try my hardest anyway.
Places are starting to fill, but we still have more places to fill. So come and join us in beautiful Milton, 21st to 23rd of June.
Oh my goodness, I launched my website last week.
Yay, yes, that's right.
Yes, www.listenuppodcasting.com.au. Please go and check it out. Just because I spent a year of really hard work with a wonderful woman called Lauren Pothoff from Tomato Creative, the most amazing web designer ever, and I'm really proud of it. Like, it's not perfect, that's what I say. Some things will work, some things won't work, but we're giving it a burl, and, yeah, we're going to see what we can do in the podcasting space. I'm excited.
It looks amazing, and it's a great resource. There's so much there about podcasting. Everyone needs to check it out.
Yes, yes. I'll talk more about that another day. Okay, cool. I think that's it. Until next time.
Yep. Until next time, Kel. Bye.
And that's it for this episode. Go to our website for all the episodes, for all the podcasts, and for all the information, www.writesforwomen.com. You can find us on Facebook at Writes for Women and Twitter and Instagram at W4W Podcast. Can't wait to catch up with you in another fortnight. Until then, go and live your best life. This podcast episode was produced and edited by Kel Butler from Listen Up Podcasting.